Good evening, everyone. This is Pam Stack. I'm your host on Authors on the Air. We are proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. If you're listening to us live from Blog Talk Radio, would you please click the follow button so they know we're doing our job? You can find all the information about the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network on Facebook at Authors on the Air or at Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. You're certainly welcome to go to my profile page, which is public at 4, that's the number 4, Pam Stack. You can also find us on the web at authorsontheair.com, and our Twitter handle is at authorsontheair.com. We're located in all the other social medias and in Goodreads, so please link up with us, follow us, and let us follow you. If you're a reader or a writer, you're welcome to post directly to our timeline on Facebook. We love hearing from you, whether you are published, independently published, or legacy, whether you're an aspiring writer, or whether you just love books. It's really interesting that that I'm mentioning this to you because it's really important that you know how much we value our authors, and we want you to post on the timeline on Authors on the Air. That's how I found my guest tonight. I like to go to book fairs and book conferences and all, and the Miami Book Fair International is one of the largest book fairs in the country, next to BEA in New York, which is just this past month. While I was there a couple years ago, I met my guest tonight, author Frank Ruffalo, who is quite a talented author in many genres. I'm very proud to welcome to my show a man who every single day takes a moment and posts on our Facebook page, on our timeline, a literary quote that always makes me smile. This is the Encyclopedia of Literary Quotes, Frank Ruffalo. Frank, welcome to Authors on the Air. I'm so glad you're finally with me.
I'm so glad to be here. Hi, Pam.
Hi, Frank. How are you this fine evening?
I'm fine. I can't wait to get started and hope I can speak to a lot of new people.
Well, I hope you can, too. So, first of all, I want to thank you very much for always bringing a smile to mine and our friends' faces every time you post on Authors on the Air. Not only do you show us your beautiful book jackets, they're fabulous, and tell us the content of your stories, but you always leave us with a literary quote. Do you have a huge book full of literary quotes by any chance?
No, I shouldn't really give you my secret, but I get most of my quotes off of Goodreads.
Do you really? Well, good for
yeah.
you. I'm glad to hear that. Frank, we can find you on Goodreads under what name exactly?
Frank A. Ruffalo.
And do you have Storyteller on there or just on Frank
A.
Ruffalo?
No, Storyteller is just Frank A. Ruffalo. Storyteller is on Facebook.
Okay, so I want everyone to be clear. If you're a if you're a Goodreads lover, and I am, please go and look up Frank, middle initial A, Ruffalo, Ruffolo, and make sure you go and find Frank. He's got a lot of interesting things to say. You and I were talking before the show started, and you started your writing career kind of later on in your life after you had already had a regular business career. You were in purchasing and purchasing management for a very, very long time.
Right.
Have
in fact, I started while I was – okay, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Frank.
I started writing while I was still in purchasing.
Really?
I started fully employed. I'm now semi-retired. But I started writing – in 2007. I was still a purchasing manager at the time.
I want to take you back first before we get into when you started writing. Were you always a reader? Do you remember reading as a child?
Not as a child, and I didn't get very good grades in high school.
Right.
After I got out in the workplace, you know, in my 20s, and I was an avid, I used to read a lot. I don't read too much anymore, but I should. But I've been doing a lot of writing lately, so most of my time right now has been taken up. But I used to read one or two books a week.
Wow. So when did you decide, or how did the writing bug hit you?
Wow, that's a What happened, actually what happened, is I literally woke up one morning with an idea, and I said to myself, you know, I got a great idea for a movie. Was my first thought when I first woke up. And that was the beginnings of my action adventure, which was the Trihedral of Chaos. What I wanted to do was write a sort of like an action love story for the baby boomer generation, you know, for the guys my age. So I thought about that a while, and every morning I would wake up, you know, that idea kept going into my head. You know, I got this great idea for a movie. This, you know, when I came, you know, I said, you know, maybe I should start writing this down. So I got myself a notebook paper. I didn't go on a computer yet. I got a little composition book.
Right, a black and white.
And I started writing, like you do in school. And I just started handwriting. And you know, one page came to 10 pages, came to 20 pages, and I said, you know, this is getting kind of serious. Maybe I should go to a keyboard and open up a Word document and start. And that's how I started. It was one day in 2007, and I started writing the new book, and here I am today.
And what did you name that first book?
Well, the initial story was going to be named September Sunrise.
Okay.
Because it was going to be a love story in the September of our years.
Okay.
And
but
I
that
started
changed.
The book, and I started the book in the book, which is the Trihedral Chaos, started, the book starts in September, and it starts on a sunrise. So it grew from there.
And what did it become? What was the name of your first book?
Well, the first book...
No, the one you're telling us about.
Well, the one I'm telling you about is not my first book. But the first book, it turned into Trihedral of Chaos.
Okay. Which I want you to explain to our listeners exactly what that is and so that they'll understand.
Okay. Trihedral, basically, if you look up the Webster Dictionary version of trihedral,
three.
It just means a three-sided
meeting points,
three-sided
right.
building or a three-sided geometric shape.
Right.
So what I started writing, I took my main character, started writing him in this action adventure, and basically it's three basic stories, and I take his progression through the whole from being a retired person, getting started in this action adventure series, and being involved in international terrorism and protecting the United States, to being a consultant. The next story, he comes back as a consultant, and in the following story, he's fully retired, and he's asked to come back in and help. So it's basically three basically different stories of three different type of terror attacks that are going to happen in the United States.
Okay, but it's the same main character throughout the three.
Same main character through the book.
Through
right.
novellas,
you're,
okay.
You're taking him a progression. He's a widower at first, who's semi-retired, has moved to Florida with two buddies of his. He's working part-time. He's ex-military and ex-New York police officer. He's now working part-time in Homeland Security as a sky marshal. He gets pegged by the federal government to join a federal organization to help against terrorism. He's as a widower, he meets a new love of his life, and you follow his progression, how he has to balance love of family with love of country, and there's three separate stories that you follow his trek.
What are the names of the three stories, please?
The first story is called The Crescent Star.
Okay.
The second story is called The Falcon's Canticle.
Okay.
And the last story is Yellowcake.
You know, the names of your books are very interesting to me, and we're going to discuss that in a little bit. But you also have another book out that is so unlike this trilogy that you have now put in an omnibus edition. Tell me about the other book.
Okay, what had happened? Let me tell you how I started writing that book.
Okay.
My wife and I, we have in a section of our house, we have on display a Bible, just to show our faith.
Okay.
So every morning, every morning when I get up, I say my morning prayers.
Okay.
I always say it by the Bible.
Okay.
I give my thanks and I give my glory and I ask my petitions and thank God for what he's given me and devote my life to him and whatever happens, it's in his hands. Basically,
okay.
It's my morning prayers.
Okay.
And to get my inspiration for the day, I open up the Bible and whatever my foggy eyes can vision on bright and early in the morning, the first passage I read is my inspiration for that day. I've been doing this for, 30, 40 years.
Good for you.
I started writing the trilogy. And one morning I got up to go to work, said my prayers, open up the Bible, and I open up to passage Luke 21:11, which basically he's telling his apostles what a lot of people call now what the end times are going to be. This is what's going to happen before he returns.
Okay.
And the passage says there's going to be earthquakes and plagues in various places, and there'll be terrors in the sky and great signs. That's the passage.
Okay.
So I read it and I went, okay, go to work. Next morning I get up, same routine, open up the Bible, same passage.
Really? What are the chances of that?
Right. And then I said, okay, coincidence. Close the Bible, go to work. Next morning, open up the Bible, same passage.
Okay, that's three times is not a coinkydink
anymore. Three times is not a coincidence anymore. It happened four times.
Oh, my God.
So after the fourth time, I said, somebody's telling me something.
Obviously.
So then I said, how would God portray this? How would he develop the great signs and the pestilence and the earthquakes? How would he do this? How would he announce to the world what's going to happen? And then I said, he's omnipresent. He could do anything he wants. I mean, he can come into everyone's house and say, you got to do this or else, but he gave us all free will.
Right.
So I said, how would he do this? Then I said, I guess he would choose someone to come and bring a message. And who did he first choose to bring the message? When his son first came, he chose Archangel Gabriel. So in my book, what I did is, I'll just read you the overview of the book, which is on the back cover. It says, in the year 2028, plagues and pestilence and vast global disasters suddenly erupt. As spewing volcanoes cover the earth with dense cloud of ash, God sends the Archangel Gabriel with an incredible message for mankind.
Wow. Well, listen, I like how that story developed then. That's a really interesting story. And so your that book was based on a routine that you do every day. The other books, the trilogy of novellas, it was based on a dream you had of writing a movie, and that turned into three separate books and then into one omnibus edition. So that's a very interesting thing. Now, you also have written out of those genres. You've got action adventure and you've got this
post-apocalyptic, right.
going on with a little bit maybe of theological fiction in there too. I'm not really sure how you want to describe it, but it's fiction. But you told me that you also you finished writing another book and are doing edits on another one. So tell me about the one that you finished first.
Okay.
The new book.
I just signed a contract with Linkville Press, which is a legacy publisher. Thank you. And that's a murder mystery.
And where did your story idea for this book come from?
Oh, from the voices in my head.
There you go. Okay, so you're talking with your imaginary friends.
I'm talking
Good
with my
you.
Imaginary friends.
Okay, now that book is in the can already, and you are that is with a publisher, correct?
Right. That's where it should be out by either late this year or early 2015.
Can we get a teaser maybe on the working title as you know it to be?
Well, right now it's just called the Jack Stenhouse Mysteries.
Okay.
There's two basic stories in there because we follow Jack and his hooker girlfriend, Deidre Lee. She's not a hooker. She's a stripper girlfriend, Deidre Lee.
Okay.
Her nickname is Dee Dee because she has the attributes to match her name.
Okay. Double D's. I got it.
Double D's. Okay. And that's basically Jack is a player. He was married 3 or 4 times, never had any kids because he got a vasectomy while he was in college because he didn't want to be bothered buying condoms.
Like one has something to do with the other in this day and age.
Yeah,
that's
you
so
know,
funny.
So he's that type of guy. His 3 marriages failed because he likes hookers and strippers. So
way other side.
Yeah. He's a homicide detective in Fort Lauderdale. And the book starts basically what happens there. It starts with a bright, sunny, typical August Fort Lauderdale summer morning.
Hot, humid.
With the hot, humid, and the purple clouds are just percolating offshore, and the thunderstorms are coming in, and
absolutely.
And you have people run. You have people jogging and lovers walking up and down the beach. And we have this one old retired man with his new metal finder, and he's scouring the beach for anything he can find.
God, I love
and
those
he gets
things.
A hit.
I want someone to give one of those
and
to
he,
me.
and he gets a little hit on his screen that he finds a ring. So in wild anticipation, he drops to his knees and he starts clawing at the dirt. Earth and sand to get to his prize, and suddenly he jumps up in horror because the owner of the ring is still wearing it.
Oh boy, that's not good. But that's a great way to start a book. God, that's a great way to start a book, Frank.
And
I love it already.
Yeah. So, and what happens? Jack gets called in because now he has to figure out why beautiful women are dying from the bite of a black mamba, which is a snake that only occurs in Africa.
Right. I know what those are, too. Very deadly.
So,
as a matter of fact, we might have some of those hiding down in the Everglades, mightn't we?
Yeah, who knows? Whatever we got thrown
out
there, we got a lot of people throwing everything else out there.
Yeah. For our listeners, Frank and I are South Florida people. He's on the Southeast Coast. I am now on the Southwest Coast. But, you know, we just, those kind of things don't terrorize us or terrify us because we're kind of used to South Florida. Everybody dumps their creatures down here, including monitor lizards and all that. So you've got this
else,
one. And
yeah.
Then, yeah, so now you've got this one in the can, and you are editing one right now. And
that's right. Well,
okay.
Let me tell you a little bit more about the one that's with the publisher. What it is we follow Jack from Florida to New York because he's a typical Florida guy, but he hates the heat, and he hates his boss, and he wants to get to a bigger city. So he ends up transferring to the First Precinct in New York City. And as the rookie cop on the beat, and the First Precinct, he gets thrown into a case where there is a serial killer, but the serial killer is only choosing victims during the Feast of Saturnalia.
Do I know what that is?
Well, Saturnalia was the original pagan feast that occurs in December that sort of celebrates winter, which a lot of people say that's where Christmas came from. when the Romans took over. So.
Okay, very good. But, are you a follower of pagan myths by any chance?
No.
I mean, do you read about them? Is this something you learned about, or did you have
I just had this idea, and it goes with that, and the idea is going to cover that in Roman and Greek mythology, and there's a twist at the end, but if you want to see the twist,
playing, you're playing to the things that you like, which I think that's really great. You're writing about the things that you enjoy, and that's terrific. Now, you also mentioned that you're finishing up a story that's yet to be submitted to your publisher because you're going through your rough drafts and cleaning it up. What genre will that, or subgenre, I should say?
Well, that's going to be a sequel. That's going to be a sequel to Gabriel's Chalice. That one's called Tres Archangelus, which is Latin for three archangels.
Interesting. So you are finishing the edits on that. You've gotten a lot of really good reviews from Amazon, from readers on Amazon. I've read them, and congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Frank, you started off, it's interesting to me that you started off as an independently published author, but yet went to a traditional press to be published. You got a contract from a traditional press. A lot of authors now are leaving traditional publishing and going into independent publishing. Why did you want to be go through a traditional publisher versus continuing to be an independent author?
Okay. What I found as an indie author, it's very hard to get the word out, especially if you have not devoted your whole life and you have an infinite supply of cash to support yourself. So as an indie author, I do work part-time.
Sure.
I really don't have time to go out and market myself. So as an indie author, whatever we can do to market ourselves is basically online or digitally. So, we're on Facebook and Twitter and Tumblr and Pinterest and it's very hard. I've spoken to other indie authors too, and it's very hard for an unknown indie author, unless they decide, which I am totally against, giving their stuff away on, as 99 cents or free or like a lot of them do on Amazon and Smashwords, and they give their stuff away for 99 cents, to get your reader to buy the book. So it seems like unless you have gone with a legacy publisher at one point in your career, the average reader out there really doesn't tune you in as well. So I think an established legacy publisher who have gone that route, they go to the independent route because they make more royalty on the independent route than they do through a publisher. And I think an indie publisher who starts in the indie route will eventually try to go with a legacy publisher and then get established that way and then probably go back.
I see. I have a lot of guests who are published by one of the top five, and there are only five big publishing companies around now that we talk about, the powerhouse five there. But they say they still have to market themselves. That it's you're vying for table space in a Barnes and Noble or other bookseller, whether it's an independently owned bookstore or the remaining Barnes and Nobles or Books a Million, that you have to really be a powerhouse name to get shelf space. Never mind to get table space. So. And they still have to market themselves. It's probably the top 20 who actually crank out a hardcover book once a year. And even them, and I interview them too, as you know, you see my posts every day.
Yeah.
They still have to market themselves. So what is it that you're not going to have to worry about with your new publisher? I don't know them, and I'm not saying that they're not going to do everything they can for you. I'm simply saying, what is it they're going to do for you that you're not able to do yourself? Are they going to be able to put you in bookstores? You think that's going to make a difference for you? Are they going to, like, strategically place you in social media where you wouldn't already go to? I would like to see. I'm not a writer. I'm a reader, as you know. So tell me what they're going to do that you can't do. Because I want to understand. Because from, you know, you're like the guy next door, Frank, who decides, you know, later on in his life after he's, you know, he's worked and everything and he's winding down his career, and you decide, I think I'm going to try this. I kind of like the idea and see how I do. And you know, found out you're pretty damn good at it. I mean, you got some talent there. You got writing chops and all. So what is your publisher doing for you that you can't do for you?
Well, I've tried as an indie to go to my local Barnes & Noble here in South Florida.
Yeah, they're not going to take your books.
Well, yeah. I tried to say, not to take it, but I tried to say, you know, I'm a local guy. Can I come in and talk about my book or something like that? And they said, oh, no, you can't do that. You got to be with an established publisher, and we don't take any indie people. So speaking with the current publisher I have now, I think once I am labeled a legacy publisher, an author with a legacy publisher, I am able to have doors open which previously are closed, just because I'm no longer classified an indie.
Right. But now I'm going to play devil's advocate here, because I think this is important for authors to consider, the way that you have, what their publishing route will be. So I go to a lot of book signings, but I also know a lot of authors. And I go to a lot of writer conferences, and I go to a lot of book fairs and things like that. Granted, I'm part of the media, so that makes a difference. But I don't go to book signings at Barnes & Noble, and I don't know a lot of people who do. Not because it isn't a great bookstore, because I love Barnes & Noble. Believe me, I like anything that has books in it. I'm in love with the book section in the grocery store, Target and Walmart in their bookstores, you know, their book sections. So I want you to understand, I'm not being a snob about Barnes & Noble, but I don't know that they get a whole lot of people in a book signing, because I don't know that a whole lot of people know there's an author signing, a book signing event.
Now you have to market yourself.
Well, right. So if you have to market that yourself, and you obviously can't go to every single Barnes & Noble, or there aren't even enough of them for you to go in South Florida alone to really make a dent, where else are they going to market you? That's my question. Is it they're going to put together a better book, a print book for you? Are they going – you know, that's what I'm questioning, because, everybody's aware that Barnes & Noble is struggling to stay alive. They've separated themselves from Nook. I mourn the loss of any bookstore, but I'm also not foolish enough not to be able to see trends in what is happening. You know, we had big – brick-and-mortar stores, chain stores that crushed independent bookstores. Now those brick-and-mortar stores are falling down. Walden Books and Borders and, you know, Books A Million is still around, but, you know, its hold is tenuous at best. They don't sell hardcover books, I don't think. If they do, that's new for me. But and I don't buy hardcover books. I don't know a lot of people that can afford to buy hardcover books. Most of them will buy a paperback edition, or they'll go to an e-book. And they'll buy ebooks. So if that is the case, if the idea is to put yourself in front of people, couldn't you set up a table on a corner outside of Publix and see more people? You know, you could technically see more people there than you could. So I guess what it is indie isn't established enough, and the marketing model isn't established enough, is it, Frank?
Not for an indie, but what my publisher is going to do, they're going to set me up with Smashwords. They're going to set me up on Amazon. They're going to do a lot of
they'll do the promo for you. Sure.
Digital promos. They're also going to do an audio book.
Oh,
and,
fantastic.
Yeah.
Those are
great. I have also contacted a publicist, and I'm going to be working with a publicist too. So
yeah, that makes a big difference.
Even though there's a large expense with a publicist, I'm working all that with my accountant. So,
well, you know something,
it can
I
be
think
done.
You're wise. We did an author branding show a couple weeks ago. It was one of our highest rated shows. We talked to a web designer who specializes in author pages, and if you remind me, I'll email you the information. His name is Michael Lowndes, and he has a site called Author Marketing Hub, and essentially it's white papers that he puts out, and you can assemble your own web page. Most authors' pages are static pages. The only time you're adding is if you're adding blog content or you have a new book out. You know, generally your web page doesn't change that much. Mine changes every day because there's any number of podcasts going on. But it's a relatively inexpensive way to have a really well-done website. The other person who was on the author branding show and marketing was a publicist, and then we had someone who did social media, and all three people said, put yourself out there, don't be a used car salesman, you know, get interact with people, get to know people, talk to them, and, you know, let them see who you are, and that's how you generate interest in your work. That's how people like you. They want to go and see what you're about, right? So maybe you're saying your publisher is going to open up those doors so more people can see who you are.
Right, and my publicist is going to get me into various conferences and
fantastic!
You know, mystery genre conferences and conventions. So.
Oh yeah, well you can't miss Sleuth Fest when it comes here in Florida.
Right,
that's a ton one. Yeah, that's a great one. And I know there's another one coming up in October. They're all over. And there was the Key West conference. There's been a couple of them. They're really, really good here in Florida. But you don't have to travel too far for it to really enjoy. I want to just take a moment here to recognize our sponsors. I mentioned Michael Lowndes and Author Marketing Hub. He's part of PML Media. You can find them on the web at pmlmedia.com. I want to thank also Discount Pets and Supply, providing the studio cats with holistic natural food. You can order online from discountpetsandsupplies.com. I also want to thank Russell Blake, the author of the Jet series. His book, Jet Ops Files, is available now through Amazon free. So go there now and get it. It's called Jet Ops Files. That is the beginning book of his Assassin series for Jet. Fantastic book. And I want to thank Brett Robinson from Pirate's Stash on eBay. I also want to thank Robert Gregory Brown, who is a fantastic thriller author, but he's also a composer and musician who did our theme music for us. And to remind you, this is a copyrighted podcast owned solely by the Authors on the Air, Global Radio Network, LLC. Listeners, call in and say hi to Frank, 347-633-9609, and tell him about your story for publishing or your dreams for making movies, or ask about his books. That's 347-633-9609. Frank, what's next for you? You're finishing up the sequel to Gabriel. Do you have a desire to explore other genres as well in fiction?
Not at this time, because I'm writing another murder mystery. I'm writing another murder mystery, which would be a sequel to the one that's coming out the end of this
year. The next
year,
in the
and
series.
I'm writing,
And
I'm writing a third sequel to Gabriel's Chalice, which basically takes place on Mars. So.
Wow. So you're kind of venturing into the realm of science fiction too, which will be very interesting. Good for you. Very good. I want to ask you, what does your family think of your writing? You becoming an author later on. Are they happy, skeptical, make a joke, or totally 100% supportive of you? All of the above, or some of the above, or none of the above?
I would say some of the above. They're happy, but they make a joke. And, they're supportive, but, you know, it's like, well, it's another hobby he's doing. You know, it's...
this is a hobby, yes. Yes.
I mean, they like my work. I mean, they read my books, but they really... They're really excited that a legacy publisher is taking my book. So
gives you validity
Everybody seems to, you're right, everybody seems to think that because you're an indie author, you're not a real one.
Yeah. Boy, are they wrong about that. There are plenty, I had a conversation with Russell Blake the other night. He's a regular guest here about every other month, and he was saying that, most authors, especially mid-list authors, do not have breakout hits. They don't have a breakout book that shoves them into the stratosphere, and then they have to live up to that. He said, so it's kind of a good and a bad thing. You don't have to live up and try to outsell your breakout book. But in the meantime, a lot of authors just sit down and write darn good fiction.
Good.
And there's not one book, you may have a personal preference, but there's not one book that like takes them out of the stratosphere and that they make a very, very comfortable, six-figure salary at whatever works for them, that they can live very comfortably, pay their bills, sock some money aside, and still have leftover to go for, shots of tequila and vacations or whatever you want to spend it on. So I think that's pretty, pretty true. It also is pretty true, something that you said earlier about working. A lot of the authors that I speak to, some of them actually like to work. They enjoy their full-time jobs or day jobs and don't mind it. One of my most favorite authors is John Gilstrap, who is traditionally published. And he got bored sitting around writing all the time. And so he went to work. He had a job created for him, and he works. So he says he doesn't like not working, even though he's very successful as an author. So I'm glad to hear you say that you still have a job, Frank, because I think that that's important for authors to know. It's okay to still have a job. Maybe you're measuring your success by still having a job, but a lot of people do because they really like what they do too.
That's true. I mean, I as much as I write, I couldn't see myself sitting at a computer and writing 8 hours a day.
Yeah. How much do you write a day? Do you set an amount, a number of pages, words, or hours? Are you a very disciplined writer?
Well, because I'm working and my schedule is different every week, I work part-time, I have to sort of fit in my writing to my free time. So,
sure.
When I sit down and try to write, I try to write at least 1,000 words per book.
Do you write?
Which is not a lot, but...
Well, wait a minute now. Are you writing more than one book at a time?
Yeah, I'm writing two.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. How do you do that? I don't know a lot of authors that can do that. You're cuckoo.
I'm cuckoo. You know, when the voices start talking, then you got to start writing.
That's so funny.
Yeah, I'm writing. Yeah, I'm writing too.
And they're not even similar genres either.
Not even close.
Jeez, Frank, let me ask you something. When you and your wife are out and about, and you're in a crowded, say, restaurant or something, do you ever overhear people talking and think, I like how that sounded. I could make something of that in my book. do you kind of like, sort of kind of not intentionally, but sort of intentionally eavesdrop to get, and do you pick up any good dialogue that you'd like to use?
Oh, all the time.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you a people watcher too?
No, not really, but it depends on if something strikes my fancy, you know. And I think I can use it in the particular storyline I'm writing now. I'll lend an ear closer, or store it away in the back of my mind somewhere so I get home. You know?
Do you write a lot of notes to yourself when you have ideas?
You know, I should. Because one of these days I'm going to forget something. But you know, my kids just got me for Father's Day. My son and daughter, they got me a few different things. But one of the small gifts they got me a astronaut's pen that can write upside down. You know, doesn't run out of ink.
Yep.
And a tiny little journal that I can carry with me.
Why not just carry an MP3 player? It's so easy, or a little tiny micro cassette recorder.
Yeah, you know, I'm not into that. I'm old school.
You're old school. So pen and paper is it.
I'd rather just write it down. Yeah.
Good for you. Frank, tell us where we can find you on the web and where we can find you on Facebook, please. Your web address.
Okay. Web is www.frank, FrankArruffolo.com.
Very good. And
Frank
on Facebook.
FrankArruffolo.com. Facebook, I have two pages on Facebook. I have my normal personal page, which is Frank A. Ruffolo Storyteller. And then I have Frank A. Ruffolo Author.
Ah.
I'm also on Twitter, which is Ruffolo Author, at Ruffolo Author.
Yeah, I sent you a tweet about the show. Now, you're on Goodreads quite a bit because you get these really interesting literary quotes there. Will we find you under Frank Ruffolo or under Frank A. Ruffolo?
Frank A. Ruffolo.
Frank A. Ruffolo. And
right.
Such a nice French last name.
yeah, really.
And a nice Southern accent. You are an Italian. An Italian of heritage from New York, I'm assuming.
Right.
Yeah.
But I've been. I basically lived in Florida longer than I lived in New York.
Really? So are you? You're a kind of a native by osmosis, then.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I've been down to Florida since '79.
Oh, well, you've got a ways to go yet. Okay. Well, we'll give you your temporary status then in being a Floridian. So funny. Hey, you know, usually at the end of when I interview, I do something called Final Five. It's five quick questions and five quick answers. Those are the studio cats. Excuse me while I move them out of the way. Five quick questions and five quick answers. So are you game to play with me?
Sure.
Okay. So my first question is, what should I ask you? My first question is, whose book is on your nightstand?
Wow.
Are you reading?
I'm very embarrassed. I can't
Why?
Think I could. Wow, I'm very embarrassed. I don't remember the author's name.
Okay. What is the genre of book that you're writing in, that you're reading?
It's science fiction humor. It's Traveler's Guide to the Universe?
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe. Yeah,
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe, right.
That's an oldie. An oldie but moldy. It's
that's
a
an
good
oldie,
one,
yeah.
though.
It's an oldie but goldie,
yeah.
But that's what's on my nightstand.
Very good. What do you like to do in your spare time?
Besides write?
Yeah.
Garden.
How wonderful. Oh, that's terrific. Very good.
I tend my orchids.
Oh, how nice. Oh, and, you know, South Florida being the jungle that it is with all the humidity is a good place for a lot of them, too. And we do have an exquisite collection here, that's for sure. Are any of members of your family creative like you? Do they have any interest in painting or music or writing or anything?
My daughter is very creative. She doesn't do writing, but she could. We keep telling her that she should, but she doesn't. And she's very creative and she's very artistic.
And wow, that's great. That's great.
My son, my son's a software engineer, so he does his own things with the dots and the dashes and the zeros and all those, whatever the software guys do.
Well, that's terrific. Very good. Who is your favorite writer?
My favorite writer? Robert Heinlein.
Really? So you really are a sci-fi guy.
Yeah, I'm a sci-fi guy.
Wow. That's
basically, I'm a sci-fi guy. I also like Carl Sagan.
Yeah.
Like
so you're a purist then. You are a science fiction purist, if you like.
I'm a sci-fi guy. Ray Bradbury.
Wow. Yeah. That's paranormal and sci-fi. That's great. Terrific. What's the best piece of advice you can give to, people who want to write? What would you tell them right now?
Don't think that you can't. Get yourself to start a journal or a composition
mm-hmm.
book and a pen and just
mm-hmm.
write down what you are thinking. I write in a narrative, so I write down as if I'm telling a story, because that's why I call myself. I'm a storyteller. So I just write down whatever comes to my mind, I write it down. You don't have to worry about the spelling, don't have to worry about the grammar. Just write down what you want to say. And after you get it written down, if you want to pursue it and get yourself into a computer and do it that way, then you can refine it. But just
write it down. Put your butt in the chair and do it. Yeah, write it down.
Write it
That's
down.
Really
Even if
fun.
You're... Yeah, you're never going to get started unless you physically start.
That's right. You can't start till you start. Great advice. Frank Ruffolo, I want to thank you so much for being my guest on Authors on the Air tonight. I want to remind our listeners that tomorrow night we are going to be with, or actually in the afternoon, we're going to be with Sam Cabot. Sam Cabot is the pen name for two very gifted writers, S.J. Rosen and Carlos Duz. Because Carlos lives in Italy, we'll be doing our broadcast at 3 o'clock in the afternoon tomorrow, although S.J. lives here in the States. So we have an international broadcast. I'm going to be interested to see how they collaborate on their work. And then on Friday, my friend, everybody's friend, Sean Sweeney is coming back. The newly married Mr. Jen Slade is going to be joining us at 1 o'clock before he goes off to the Cape for the weekend, and we're going to hear about what he's doing besides his sports journalism and what books he's writing. We're going to see what's new and exciting with Sean. And then next week, boy, it's going to be a great week. We've got Jenny Milchman on her roadshow on Tuesday morning. Revis Wortham is coming in. That's cowboy thriller stuff there. And then we have Terry Ambrose coming for his mysteries on Wednesday. And the magnificently, fabulously wonderful thriller writer Andrew Gross joins us on Friday. And who knows, maybe some more stuff in between. I don't know. We never know. Frank, I can't thank you enough for being with me. I wish
thank
you all
for
the success.
Me.
And please come back when, give it about 6 months when you've got all these other books under your belt. My God. And come back and tell me what it's like being a traditionally published author, will you?
Will do. And say hello to Jenny for me.
I sure will. I'll be glad to. You know, you can listen every Tuesday morning at 10. She's there, okay?
Okay.
Thanks very much, Frank. And I want to thank all my listeners tonight for being with us. And I'll talk to you again tomorrow. And thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night, everyone.
Good night.